Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And it's as time goes on and you learn different stories about things that happened in your state or in your town, like, boy, why did I never hear about this? And I'm sure there are people who are over 50. You'd probably have to be in your 60s to really remember this story.
I had no idea about this story.
Yeah. So 50 years ago, in a secluded portion of northeast Wisconsin, a five-week-long standoff between Menominee Native Americans, the National Guard, and the surrounding community served as another flashpoint in a centuries-long struggle between Native Americans and the federal government. WTMJ's Adam Roberts explores the occupation of the Alexian Brothers Novitiate. That's it. Sorry.
He'll say it right.
I was trying to read. I knew how to say it when I just read the word, but then I tried to read it in his phonetic spelling, and I got all screwed up. Hey, it's the Alexian Brothers Novitiate. Here it is.
I would kill that son of a so fast it'd make your head swim.
The time has come for all persons in the Shawnee and Menominee area to heal its wounds.
It's the first time I was ever under fire.
If you visit West 9711 Butternut Road, 10 miles northwest of Shawnee today, all you'll see is a dilapidated stone mansion built for the wife of a Nabisco executive in the late 1930s. But just after midnight, New Year's Day, 1975, some four dozen armed members of the Menominee Warrior Society would storm the building, aiming to reclaim the land for the tribe. By the next day, the standoff had begun.
Be on the lookout for two subjects with knapsacks.
The National Guard formed a perimeter, and local police quickly cut off power and water to those on the inside. Negotiations were slow, and tensions were high.
The key to this standoff is the attitude of the Indians inside. Will they give up in return for immunity from prosecution, or will they try to hold out for ownership of the land they now occupy?
I think they would have died for their cause. They were pretty clear on how much they wanted it.
Photographer Al Bergstein was the lone journalist with an unfiltered look inside the Novitiate during the standoff. He says agitated residents in nearby Gresham, Wisconsin, began to take matters into their own hands.
Every night, the locals would drive up through the woods. I would say they were within 100 yards, probably, if not closer. And they were firing what I would consider to be semi-automatic weapons. I mean, there was a lot of bullets flying around. I was, like, crouched down behind the window wall, and bullets were flying, ricocheting all over the room. It was really remarkable that no one got hit and hurt, because the Indians were returning fire to those guys. So it was remarkable that neither side had any casualties.
The standoff would attract national headlines. Media attention led to the arrival of members of the American Indian Movement, along with Milwaukee civil rights activist Father James Groppi and even actor Marlon Brando. As part of documentarian Kevin McKeeran's coverage on the standoff in 1975, Brando noted it was an experience unlike any he'd had before.
We were up on the roof and the bullets started to fly all around us, and it was a sudden change of reality. It's the first time I was ever under fire.
The credit for the lack of bloodshed during the standoff is owed to the negotiation tactics employed by National Guard Lieutenant Colonel Hugh Simonson.
Colonel Simonson did not want this to escalate to violence. He was doing his best to keep the lid on the thing, and I think he was doing a good job, frankly.
Our plans are to, as expeditiously as possible, exit those 40 souls from the Abbey.
Do you have a game plan?
We sure do.
But after over a month of little movement, tensions were ratcheting up once again. Memories of the deadly Wounded Knee occupation in 1973 were still raw, and both sides realized the longer the standoff continued, the more likely things would escalate to bloodshed. So on February 2nd, a deal was reached where the Alexian brothers would sell the property for $1.
The time has come for all persons in the Shawnee and Menominee area to heal its wounds and to ensure a constructive outcome from this distasteful conflict.
The following day, 39 Native men and women surrendered to the National Guard and were later arrested, officially ending an often forgotten chapter of Wisconsin history. Five Natives, including leader Michael Sturtevant, would be charged. Only three, including Sturtevant, would see prison time. Adam Roberts, WTMJ News.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bride.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And thanks again to Adam Roberts for that fantastic feature on the standoff. And to learn more about the standoff and hear the full interview with photographer Al Bergstein, text STANDOFF to the Sighting Unlimited talk and text line 855-616-1620. That's STANDOFF to the Sighting Unlimited talk and text line 855-616-1620.
You know Willie Nelson's 92? And still performing?
I'm a huge Willie Nelson fan. I've talked to people who've seen him lately. It's performing is, you know, he's showing up. And this is all due respect. I think
it's not like Bruce Springsteen. I mean, Bruce Springsteen's not 92, but he's still. I mean, I think Steve went when he was at the show at Fiserv 1 or 2 years ago and just brought the house down. And he plays for like 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, yeah. But, Springsteen still is full of energy, but he's 20 years younger. Willie is.
Still, being in your 70s and playing like that?
Yeah.
But yeah, Willie Nelson, 92. He turns 92 in April. Sorry,
yes.
He's not quite 92.
All right, don't age him.
He is leading the traveling festival, Outlaw Music Festival. It's its 10th anniversary, and they will be coming to Alpine Valley on September 19th. But not only that, it's also Bob Dylan's going to be with them.
I would still want to see Willie Nelson. I don't know if I want, you know.
Yeah, Bob Dylan guy?
No, not really. And I know that's good. People are going to be upset. They're going,
I mean, to each their own.
People are always upset.
Don't yuck your yum.
Yeah,
man.
If you listen, if you like Bob Dylan, good for you.
Did you see A Complete Unknown?
I want to see the movie.
I saw it. It's really good.
Because I recognize Bob Dylan's place in history. I recognize what an influence he was in the music world. It's just not my jam, you know?
Just not a folk music guy?
No, other than Puff the Magic Dragon. But that's because there's underlying meanings.
The movie is very good. The movie is very, very good. I had no idea that sliver of history of how he was evolving his music and how angry there were.
Oh, yeah.
How angry people were at him for not just doing, like, do what we know you for.
Exactly.
And it's such an interesting thing. And I'm trying to think of what other, as Beyonce now just won for genre-bending music, right? She just won for, you know, finally got Album of the Year for the Grammys. Also got Best Country Album. CMAs did not recognize her, but that's a whole other issue. But, you know, that was really embraced, I think, by at least her fans.
Right.
Well, country music fan, maybe not. But this was interesting to me when I watched the movie of seeing the backlash that he received from people who were so angry that he had gotten a band. And it wasn't
when
just
he went
him.
Electric.
Him, yeah, just with him with his guitar. And I was trying to think of other artists who've done that, who then stand on a stage, play what they want to play instead of what the crowd wants to hear.
Well, I think.
And who else is. Like, I'm trying to. You
takes,
might know.
It takes a big. It takes the audience go with you. Because if you think about it, Taylor Swift was a country artist. Straight
absolutely.
Up 100% country artist. Now she's one of the biggest names in pop music. Shania Twain kind of did the same thing. She kind of she brought that to the forefront where it was, okay, she was a country artist mm-hmm. too, and then became a huge crossover pop star. So there, it's been done. But I think if you go back, Dylan had to be one of the first of that caliber artist to really risk everything. Because when he went electric, people, as you said, lost their minds.
Well, and that's what I'm trying to think, because, like, in at least how it's depicted in the movie, which I have to imagine is based in what actually happened at the Newport Music Festival, is when he played, and, you know, people were throwing stuff at him, and, like, what it takes as an artist to stand on stage with people who are so excited to see you, and then they turn on you like that, and to keep playing the music that you want to play, because I think that's what's interesting about when you see people live in concert, is they as creative, you know, like as artists, want to continue to be pushing the envelope and doing new things and trying out new music and playing new stuff that gets them excited versus, like, I remember when I got to see Adele and her talking about having to sing the same song of her being broken, like her broken heart at 25. But that's what people want to hear. Like, I saw Alanis Morissette last year, and she's still singing You Oughta Know, but she wrote it like 19, and it's still like an anthem. And that was an cathartic experience. I did not know that I needed to be in a concert at the amphitheater with like 25,000 millennial and Gen X women just screaming You Oughta Know. It's like, I didn't know I needed this.
Well, you did, obviously. What about Sting? Sting has evolved his music. He's not still doing, a lot of the Police
stuff. Who else has ever received backlash for it?
Miley Cyrus.
Oh, Miley.
Well, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, because she started as a child star.
Bubblegum, Disney pop
to hip-hop, and then back to rock.
Twerking. But she's survived it.
Yeah. I think if you're truly an artist, you don't care. You don't care if there's backlash.
And if you're that good, you continue to find new audience. So we got some texts coming in as far as people. Elvis was a crossover, as was Dolly Parton.
Okay.
You don't consider Dolly Parton a crossover?
No, I still think of Dolly Parton as a... She may have had a couple of songs that crossed over, but I think deep down Dolly Parton is a country artist.
Elvis crossover from rock and roll from... he won most of his Grammys were for gospel.
Right. He started out as just... Because rock and roll hadn't really started. He started out doing more R&B stuff, covers of songs that were already out there, and then he evolved into what became rock and roll. But there wasn't really rock and roll before that.
Someone said to me, Avicii, if you remember him, the
that's
EDM.
That Cold Fish stuff?
No. Brian. He was the EDM DJ. And I guess when he started adding more vocals and stuff into his music, there was a lot of people at some of those big electric music concerts that were not very happy about it. But I'm trying to think of... So if you know any other backlashed artists, let us know. But first, ABC News and local headlines. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And there has been a lot going on this week, in the first 2 weeks, actually, of the new administration. It's been a flurry of new policy decisions, including an impending trade war, deportations, potential funding freezes. And a lot of those policies are going to have direct impact on the agriculture industry across the country and here in Wisconsin. So who do we talk to when we have questions about agriculture? Well, joining us to shed some light on the impact that Wisconsin farmers might feel is the fabulous farm babe, Pam Yonke. You hear her on the Midwest Farm Report every weekday morning from 5 to 6 right here on WTMJ. Pam, welcome. Thank you for being
here. Yeah, hi, guys. Good to be along with you.
All right, let's start with the tariffs. Now, it was announced today that the proposed tariffs against Mexico are on hold for 30 days, but the ones against China and Canada, they're still on the table. How would those tariffs impact, if they do go through, impact Wisconsin agriculture?
So what you have to realize is that most of the tariffs that you're going to hear through press releases or official announcements are going to be bigger target items, like the auto industry. There's a lot of talk about gas, even electricity. But the thing that you have to remember is that's our side of the discussion. Then Canada, for example, has the opportunity to employ retaliatory tariffs. And over the weekend, Trudeau said he wanted to use precision strikes, basically, targeting certain key areas. Some of the certain key areas could definitely involve agriculture. Now, here in Wisconsin, which is where I focus most, 99% of my attention, keep in mind that for agriculture, our exports, the top three targeted geographies are Canada, China, and Mexico. Those are our heavy hitters. For example, pork, number one export to Mexico. So you can see how if the countries want to be very specific on what they're going to target retaliatory measures on, they could pick some commodity groups that would bring literally farmers and a lot of agribusiness to their knees. Remember, Wisconsin, our dairy industry depends on those international sales. 32% of our cheese goes international, 29% of our whey goes international. Meats is another big deal. 28% of our meats go international. Our bovine AI genetics, the cow, you know, the bull genetics, 24% of that is international. So those are those slices of agribusiness that if Canada, and like you said, Mexico is now push pause, if Canada decides they want to slice in, that could happen. The other part that I found really interesting is, and I had not paid attention to it, and this is all I do, sauces and yeast are kind of the number one, I want to say with a bullet, but that's probably not appropriate with what we're talking about here.
No.
But they really stand to lose a lot. And in the Milwaukee area, for example, you've got some big spice companies that put together, you know, maybe it's a bag of a blend of something that goes into an ingredient manufacturer someplace else. They stand to lose probably the biggest access, be it Mexico or Canada, if there's some retaliatory tariffs that go on there. So I'm currently juggling a lot of different balls, trying to pay attention to commodities. The other part that is somewhat you don't pay attention to, Wisconsin agriculture is so diverse. So they could target, for example, in the first Trump administration, our Wisconsin ginseng industry got brought to its knees because of China's tariffs. They still haven't recovered. Cranberries. We are a unique state. We're about the only ones that have cranberries, Massachusetts a little bit, Oregon a little bit. So if Canada decided, for example, they wanted to shut down cranberry movement, that could really hurt our industries. So because of the diversity of Wisconsin agriculture, like I said, I'm juggling a lot of balls today, trying to touch base with everybody in different camps and find out what they've heard, what they're preparing, how they expect to manage over the next couple of weeks while these details play out.
So, Pam, I guess that's a good place to start then, as far as what are you hearing? I mean, are people scared? Do they feel prepared for this? Were they expecting this?
Yeah, they were expecting it. I think to a company, to a commodity, they were expecting something. I think that there was probably a lot more anxiety when it came down on Saturday versus today. Even in the marketplace, I was just looking at my corn and soybean trade. They all finished positive. When I came in at 2 o'clock this morning, the Dow Jones was down more than 600 points, and all my commodities were losing ground. So just the fact that Mexico pushed pause and that Trump is going to try to talk to Trudeau has given the markets a little bit more confidence to try to continue business as usual, if there is such a thing anymore. But key industries that maybe only contract to Canada. We've got a big butter maker in Wisconsin that does a lot of business in Canada. Now, they may be a little bit more aggressive on trying to figure out what the resolution for their situation might be, if there is any.
Is there danger that the supply chain would be affected as well?
You know, that hasn't been brought up in conversation, although I'm sure that we obviously rely on plenty of goods from Canada. It's just a matter of what goods. And so far, that hasn't become real clear. Wisconsin agriculture, especially with our specialty cheese and some of that kind of thing, we're pretty self-reliant on making sure that we can get our goods taken care of. But like I said, on the broader scope, maybe when it comes to steel, for example, or something that we're using to build infrastructure or build new barns or something like that. I haven't heard anything about that yet, so it's not top of mind on most of my buddies' conversations. But like I said, it could happen and just reveal itself a little bit later.
Pam, we want to take a quick break, but when we come back, there's also the big immigration question and how much that is affecting Wisconsin farmers and the potential of funding freezes that were happening, that weren't happening. They may come back, and how that would affect Wisconsin farmers, too. Pam Yonke is our guest. She's the fabulous farm babe. Listen to her on the Midwest Farm Report every morning from 5 to 6 here on WTMJ. We'll be back after this, Spanning the State.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry.
I'm Brian Noonan. Pam Yonke's our guest. The fabulous farm babe can be heard every morning from 5 to 6 here on WTMJ on the Midwest Farm Report. All right, Pam, we talked about the possible tariffs. Now let's look these new immigration policies where there's raids. And I know they say that they're focusing on criminals, violent criminals. But the fact is that like 70% of the labor on dairy farms is by undocumented immigrants. So what are farmers thinking when they're hearing all this, and what's going on with the workforce?
Well, I kind of take issue with you, Brian, on 75% being undocumented. That those numbers are hard, if not impossible, to get. But your point is that we rely a lot on immigrant labor to get the job done, not just in Wisconsin agriculture, but in agribusiness. Our food processors, our cheesemakers, our meat processors is most definitely the case. Now, I've been keeping really close attention on that. I've got some folks, some fellow journalists that are working with ProPublica down in Chicago. They had started investigations into this situation with Wisconsin dairy 2 years ago. And right now they're currently caught up in just trying to calm fears for a lot of their friends, neighbors, constituents in Chicago. The word that I'm hearing from my dairy farms is there's been no disruption. There may be conversations about some families that are just so fearful of being dissected one family member getting held up someplace or one family member being taken away, that they're actually talking about entire families potentially moving back to Mexico to just avoid this shock to their system entirely. But I have not heard of people not showing up to milk cows. I have not heard of people not showing up to process milk or to be in the meat processing industry. So far, at least in Wisconsin, I have not heard of any of those incidents. And I will also say we talked about this during the UW Ag Outlook Forum, and people that are dairy farmers, people that do dairy consulting, are telling farms all across Wisconsin, and really anywhere for that matter, to make sure that you understand what your legal rights are if Immigration Services shows up at your dairy door and knocks on it and says, hey, we want to come in. Know what your rights are and what the limitations of ICE are, because there are limitations. And the more you know, the better you will be prepared to not only protect your farming operation, but potentially those employees. So they're advising that you talk to legal counsel about what your rights are and what their limitations are, and or talk to university extension law specialists, because they've started fanning out resources just to make sure you know exactly what you can and cannot do if those immigration officials show up. But again, as I said, bottom line is so far there has been no disruption as far as farming, taking care of the cattle, trying to get things done in Wisconsin agribusiness that I'm aware of.
Is there talk of contingency plans if that disruption were to start as far as what, how do you move forward?
There's no contingency. What's the contingency?
I don't know.
We can't install automation fast enough to replace people to milk our cows.
Yeah.
You know, quite frankly, that's the deal is in agriculture, we've got to show up. We learned it during the pandemic that you cannot replace farmers when it comes to, you know, everybody else got lucky and could stay home and work. Guess what? Farmers and agribusiness were considered emergency employees because they had to show up. Animals need people to take care of them, and there is no contingency plan if, for example, a large swath of our immigrant workers decided enough of this and just packed up and left, or for some other, you know, reasons if they were forced to leave.
Pam, when you're talking to dairy farmers or people in the meat mm-hmm. industry, is there any sense of frustration over the hypocrisy of people who are calling for all these undocumented workers to go are also eating beef and cheese and drinking milk and going out? Where do they think it comes from?
Well, and I think this time around, what I'm hearing from my farmers is they're I don't want to say calm. That's not the phrase. But they're not overreacting.
Okay.
I think the first time around when things were happening really fast and people, you know, there seemed to be an amped up action from law enforcement, that was a different animal, that different beast that we were dealing with there. This time around, I think that many farmers, and remember, the rural vote, the farm vote, is the vote that basically put him in the White
House. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
They are feeling calm right now. They feel that he has learned his lesson about how important it is to make sure that farms continue to operate, that food processing continues to operate, and that may in part be one of the reasons why they pushed pause with Mexico today, to settle people back down and make sure that that business continues as much as we can on a normal pace.
All right, finally, Pam, just before we let you go, there was the funding freeze scare last week. It's been rolled back for now. But if it were to return, or in those hours where we didn't know what it was, what did it mean for Wisconsin farmers?
Oh, man, that was probably almost as big as all the other two put together, guys.
Okay. Because we're
looking at, you've got to understand, rural communities rely a lot on some grant funding. Everything from Meals on Wheels to the rural health care that farmers depend on. So that's a big whopper. Don't forget, we've got a lot of infrastructure projects that are underway in Wisconsin. Everything from bridges to rural roads that probably depend at least a little bit on some portion of federal grants to kind of keep them moving forward. So that rascal is going to take me, that's going to keep me up hours just trying to figure out how many flanges, aside from things like our university grant work, our researchers out in the field grant work, our land conservation stewardship work, all of those, come with unique challenges on where their money is coming from to keep projects going forward. And then you talk about the Department of Education and what that means if they decide to gut that. So, like I said, I got a lot of balls in the air these days.
No kidding, Pam.
Trying to keep track of every aspect of what's being said and what its ultimate consequences or benefits could be to Wisconsin agriculture. So this is only the beginning. As I told my staff, this is only the beginning of the conversation. Do not get excited about, you know, blowing up all these stories, because within the next 4 to 8 hours, it could change.
Well, we appreciate you putting the balls down and juggling these issues with us today, Pam. It is always a pleasure to talk to you. You can hear Pam every morning, the Famulous Farm Babe, on the Midwest Farm Report, 5 to 6 right here on WTMJ. Pam, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks.
Take care, guys.
All right, let's do this. Then there's more. It's Spanning the State.
I believe it's time for me to fly.
Indeed, indeed. We have about a minute left before we have John and Julia back in action.
Yes.
Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
You have, you received a new t-shirt today from Steve Scafidi promoting something. You want to tell people about it?
Yeah. So, the podcast, we have got two episodes out. If you text listen to 855-616-1620, we'll send you the link to Steve Scafidi and my podcast called You Need to Listen.
Very nice.
And he was so, excited. He got us merch.
I saw
he got us t-shirts that we can now wear proudly.
Wow.
So I don't know where we need to get our t-shirts
now.
Thing?
Yeah. We got to get
some t-shirts.
We got to get the word out that
we got to get a shirt with a wheel on it. With all the different cities that we go to,
maybe a nice Giving Tuesday sash or something.
Maybe we'll have a Don't Yuck My Yum on a t-shirt. We have a whole bunch of merch ideas.
Listen, we gotta bolster up this income. Not that GKB is not generous, but you know.
Although with the new Chinese tariffs, I don't know how expensive those shirts are going to be right now. So I don't know if that's the best investment. Yes, but we'll see as far as. What other merch ideas we can come up with before we launch our store.
All right. Well, we are out of here. Wisconsin's Afternoon News is next.
See ya.